It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Joe Biden faces a divided Congress in his final 2 years of his term, and we get morning after analysis on his speech delivered to a joint session of Congress. Join in with your questions. What stood out to you about the State of the Union? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anthony Chergosky is here, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-La Crosse. Anthony, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So on the domestic front, what stands out to you?
Certainly the fact that economic policy figured heavily into the early portions of Joe Biden's speech. As he began his State of the Union, he jumped right into what he views as the economic accomplishments of his administration. It was a safe bet that he would start that way, certainly coming off the better than expected jobs numbers last week, certainly putting some wind in his administration's sails. He touted the jobs numbers, he touted new businesses being started up, he touted positive economic indicators, even as inflation continues to be a problem for his administration. He noted that inflation is getting better, even if he is not happy with the pace of improvement on inflation. So clearly aware that inflation remains a political problem for him, just as it remains an economic problem for the country. But certainly, Joe Biden was more than eager to tout the economic accomplishments and the economic agenda, perhaps, Kate, previewing his reelection message as he goes into a potential 2024 bid.
We will still have to stay tuned on that. Do you think, you know, as we see inflation, you know, not seen in decades and really this administration grappling with it, how did he try to connect with Americans on pocketbook issues?
Well, he really did focus on those pocketbook issues, Kate. He talked about how, in his view, people had been forgotten, people had been left behind by the economy, they had seen jobs go overseas. So he was almost trying to make an economic style appeal that we might have heard former President Trump make, trying to make an appeal to those working class voters that had been so crucial to President Trump's success and have been such a focus of President Biden as he tries to reverse the Democratic Party's fortunes among those voters. So he talked about a lot of those key economic indicators. He also just had an overall populist message that I think is aimed at connecting with the average voter. He talked about raising taxes on billionaires and raising taxes on corporations. He talked about going further in trying to control the price of prescription drugs. So he definitely had an economic message that was pitched to the average voter, to the person who might pay casual attention to politics and is really focused on those bread and butter pocketbook issues.
Something we had our ear on early on, he struck notes of unity in his message right off the top, saying that Democrats and Republicans have worked together over the past 2 years, proving the cynics and naysayers wrong.
Yes, we disagreed plenty. And yes, there were times when Democrats went alone. But time and again, Democrats and Republicans came together.
What do you think of Biden's assessment of what bipartisanship looks like in Congress?
Well, first of all, Kate, I would note that there is something to what he's saying. There were plenty of bipartisan legislative achievements over the previous Congress. Now, the big catch is that the Democrats had the majorities in both the Senate and the House during the first 2 years of Biden's administration. We are in a completely new world now with Republicans holding a narrow majority in the House of Representatives. That was quite visible last night with Kevin McCarthy seated behind Joe Biden as the new Republican Speaker of the House. And also this remarkable give and take between Biden and the Republicans in the audience. It was a very almost raucous at times atmosphere. And so while Biden did try to encourage bipartisanship and try to tout some of the cross-party achievements of the last 2 years, there is also plenty of tension on display as we go into high stakes budget negotiations, high stakes negotiations surrounding the debt ceiling, and the potential for a real standoff between these two parties.
You heard words like liar and heckling out there. I'm going to reintroduce you a moment as we talk about the State of the Union. Anthony Chergosky here, UW La Crosse political scientist. Join in at 800-642-1234. So, Anthony, arguably, you know, the biggest legislative crisis could be the debt ceiling standoff. How did Biden address the debt ceiling and federal spending?
Well, Joe Biden challenged Republicans to come to the table with their plan. He said that if they want to negotiate over the debt ceiling, then they need to come to him with specific spending cuts, with specific things that they want to cut. And he had that unscripted engagement with Republicans over Social Security and Medicare. He talked about how some Republicans favor sunsetting Social Security and Medicare every 5 years. Now, that was pretty clearly based on a policy plan introduced by Senator Rick Scott of Florida, who is no ordinary senator. He ran the Republican Party's efforts in the 2022 midterms at getting Republicans elected to the Senate. So he's an important senator, and he had this idea that all federal legislation should sunset every 5 years. And he said that if a law is worth keeping, Congress can pass it again. Now, when Joe Biden brought that up, he was received with jeers and heckles from the Republicans. There were, in fact, pictures of Congress members shouting him down. And that wasn't the only time that he faced shouts from members of the audience. Now, Kate, a few years ago, back in 2009, when Congressman Joe Wilson of South Carolina yelled, "You lie," during a 2009 speech by President Obama, it was the story from the speech, and it was viewed as an enormous violation of the norms of civility in Congress. Now, it just seems like heckling and shouts from the audience are what we can come to expect from these speeches going forward.
Well, I want to move on to gun violence and policing. And last night, the president did receive bipartisan standing applause during his words about gun violence. He said, "It is up to us," talking about the case of Tyre Nichols, who was beaten at a traffic stop and later died.
I signed an executive order for all federal officers banning chokeholds, restricting no-knock warrants, and other key elements of the George Floyd Act. Let's commit ourselves to make the words of Tyler's mom true. Something good must come from this. Something good.
So we call on Congress to finish the job on police reform. How likely is that?
I'll believe it when I see it, Kate. There are some rumblings of bipartisan negotiations on police reform, but this is not something that really came together in the last 2 years. We'll see if things come together in the upcoming 2 years. Again, though, the realities in Washington have changed enormously with Republicans taking the majority, and we know that Biden is going to have challenges working with the Republican House majority, just as Speaker Kevin McCarthy is going to have challenges trying to corral some of the members and work with some of his members and try to keep some of his members unified. So this is going to be a very messy next 2 years, and there may be some legislative accomplishments, but I would keep expectations low and simply hope that Congress can do the bare minimum of keeping the lights on. But there still is the possibility of some bipartisan negotiations on police reform. It is fair to say, though, Kate, that while Biden did push for bipartisanship, he also talked about a number of policy ideas that are simply not going to happen under this current Congress.
Anthony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Anthony Chergosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse. Up ahead, we continue to examine President Biden's State of the Union address, turning to global issues and foreign policy moments in the speech. Join in by calling with your reaction, your questions, observations, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get your takeaways on President Joe Biden's second State of the Union address since taking office and what you heard on the foreign policy front, on diplomatic challenges. Call in with your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
Well, from your global politics perspective, what stood out to you?
In the State of the Union, there's kind of a format, and a lot of times that format is the domestic policies and issues go in the front part of the speech in the first hour,
yep.
The first part, and the foreign policy stuff goes in the back end of the speech or the latter hour. Also, apparently people tune out after the first hour or so, as I understand, sort of ratings and attention spans. And so we did see that format in this case. Obviously that can be changed up when there's, an imminent threat or something to that effect. But we did see the discussion of Ukraine and China and the sort of alliance among European nations in response to Ukraine in the latter part of the speech.
Well, let's touch down here on China, which is in the latter part of the speech, as you mentioned, addressing the alleged Chinese spy balloon, and that was shot down by a U.S. military aircraft over the Atlantic coast last weekend. What did you make of Biden's references to China?
Well, he was putting up a sort of strong front in response to Chinese aggression in this regard. But he also was, explaining that he has had many conversations and sounds like he is in close touch with President Xi, and that, that the United States is prepared to sort of stand tough against China, but also to work collaboratively where their interests align.
And President Biden, he shouted in trying to make this sharp contrast between American democracy and our alliances around the world that President Xi lacks. And here's that moment.
We face serious challenges across the world. But in the past 2 years, democracies have become stronger, not weaker. Autocracies have grown weaker, not stronger. Name me a world leader who changed places with Xi Jinping. Name me one. Name me one.
What do you make of that moment of Biden's worldview?
Well, we have seen democracy under threat in a lot of different countries, including the United States, as a form of government. And he is trying to draw the contrast between a lot of the Western alliance, and Western not necessarily just in place, but in terms of disposition, and China. And so he's, again, this is the last part of the speech. This is the really the back end of the speech here. And so he was getting into the fighting Biden that we had also seen in the earlier part of the speech on domestic issues with his compatriots across the aisle. And so he's, again, sort of drawing that feistiness in his position with regard to Xi.
Let's turn to Ukraine here for a moment. Biden said America will provide Ukrainian soldiers more tanks to aid in the fight that is now going on 1 year of this invasion. How did he discuss our involvement in the war?
Well, he drew this. I thought that this was a clear discussion of not only sort of Putin as someone who has attacked inappropriately and ruthlessly, and Ukrainians who have responded, and also how the European countries and Western countries have come together in a united front against this invasion of Ukraine, and that the United States and Biden as president have also been the leaders of that. He made that pretty clear in his discussion of Ukraine. He also, of course, singled out the ambassador from Ukraine in the audience. And you could also see on a number of members and senators, their lapel pins or pins on their clothing that were Ukrainian flags or indications of support for Ukraine.
Biden called Putin's decision to invade Ukraine a year ago a test for the ages. And I want you to kind of unpack those words. Would you characterize it that way, a test for the ages?
Well, it is the invasion of a sovereign country by another sovereign country, which generally speaking, we see as what we would characterize as a war. Somebody or some country trying to take over another country. And we've seen that in, you know, our world wars. And so this is, in a certain sense, a question of whether or not the sovereign integrity of one nation, in this case, Ukraine, is something that can stand up against the attack from another country, in this case, Russia. And that is a sort of historical, world historical event in a certain sense.
Talking about the State of the Union with Lily Gorin, political science and global studies professor at Carroll University. You can join in with your reaction, your questions about the State of the Union, 800-642-1234. Lily, the Biden administration says it plans to let the national COVID public health emergency expire in May, and the World Health Organization says the virus has killed nearly 7 million people globally. What did Biden have to say about COVID? How did he connect with Americans on the pandemic?
Well, he talked about, you know, some of the problems that we all experienced during the pandemic, and that, you know, it closed down the country, it closed down schools and so forth. And he also, you know, and this is very, very Joe Biden, as a politician and as a person, he presented empathetically the loss of 1 million Americans. And he talked about the fact that, you know, there were empty chairs at the dinner table from the people that we have lost, and other, you know, sort of small ways that we see the loss in our own lives. So as to make it not just this like massive global pandemic, but also the individual experience that people had in losing loved ones to COVID. And so I think in that regard, you know, it was like talking about COVID and talking about the change in policy and so forth, but also talking about how individuals had experienced it.
Is the State of the Union address relevant or anymore, or is it disconnected from the realities of life here in Wisconsin and America?
I don't know that it's disconnected from the realities of life in the United States or in Wisconsin. You know, again, the State of the Union address is a construction that for about 100 years was just written down and delivered to Congress. It's required by the Constitution that the president update Congress on the State of the Union. And it says from time to time. That's what the Constitution says. And Washington went to the to Congress and sort of delivered the State of the Union address. And Adams did the same thing. And then when Jefferson became president, he thought that such a sort of move was very monarchical. And so he stopped that tradition, which again had hardly taken root because the nation was young, and sort of, you know, wrote it down, mailed it in. And then Woodrow Wilson returned to the sort of public experience of the State of the Union address of the president going to Congress, because as you saw at the beginning of the State of the Union, that the president has to be asked to come to the Congress by the House. And again, because the branches are separate, and to sort of, you know, be welcomed into the House as the president of the United States to deliver this message. And so since Woodrow Wilson, which was, you know, a good 100 years ago, we have seen presidents sort of make use of this as a way of speaking directly to the country, originally on radio and then obviously on television. And so it is an opportunity for presidents to sort of pull together an agenda and articulate that to the American people, as well as to Congress. And so, you know, whether or not all those items, and there are many, many items that were touched upon last night,
that laundry list.
Yeah, laundry list, that is one way of putting it, can become law or regulations or so on, is, you know, remains to be seen. But it is a way for presidents to sort of take their space as a leader of agenda and putting things on the agenda. And oftentimes presidents will often then go out to the, you know, to the public and campaign, if you will, on items that they really want
then
to see.
Then they hit the road Congress. And they go to the Madison area, apparently.
Yep.
Lily, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Lily Gorin is a global studies and political science professor at Carroll University. Earlier, we heard from UW La Crosse political scientist Anthony Chergosky. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.